Blog Talk Radio.
If it's smooth jazz, then the Jazz Queen and Mike Reynolds are talking about it on Talking Smooth Jazz, your place for all things smooth. Artist.
Hello, Brian. Welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
Hello there.
Boney James, welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
Thanks so much. It's great to be with you guys.
Layla, thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Music.
This is the Jazz Queen with the Smooth Jazz News Minute.
With the smoothest show on internet radio, your hosts, the Jazz Queen and Mike Reynolds.
Hello and welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz, where you meet the artists. It is Sunday, April 3rd, 2011. My name is Terry, a.k.a. the Jazz Queen, along with my co-host Mike Reynolds. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great today, Terry. It's a beautiful day and glad to be on with you guys today.
Well, we're glad to have you on, too.
I feel like I'm a guest, huh?
I'm like a guest. Okay. We welcome to the chat room, Joe from Germany. Hey, Joe, how are you? Miss Tina and the guests, welcome to the chat room. Welcome to the show today. If you would like to join us in the chat room, go to TalkingSmoothJazz.com and click on the Listen to Talking Smooth Jazz button. That will bring you to the Elon Trautman show. And then from there, click on the play chat button. That will bring you right into the chat room. If you would like to call in and speak with Elon, the number is 646-716-5485, 646-716-5485. The recipient of the award for Best Jazz Male at the New England Urban Music Awards and nominated for a Boston Music Award in Jazz, saxophonist Elon Trautman is a composer, producer, and teacher. His new CD is called Love and Sax. Elon Trautman, welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
Hey, Terry. Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me.
You are so welcome. Thank you for giving us the opportunity. Now, the first thing I want to ask you is, did you see Lori's write-up on you, her blog?
Yes, I did.
Nice, huh? Really nice.
Yeah, she did a great job, definitely.
Yeah, she does
pretty,
a great
pretty
job.
Impressed. You know, it seems like a lot of people are doing that these days where the magazines and stuff are not as dominant and more people are doing via internet blogs. And I thought she did a great job, you know, for people that weren't able to be at that event. You know, she did a great job of capturing everything that went down, and, you know, it was great.
Yes, she did. And if you have not seen the blog, you can go to our website, TalkingSmoothJazz.com, and click on the Adventures with the Passionate Fan page, and the blog is there. I just posted it last night with all of the pictures that she put on it as well. So it's a great blog, so go by and check it out. And so she's talking about Elon Trautman's playing in San Diego and all of that, so it's a great blog. All right, Mr. Trautman, let's start with Barbados. You were born and raised there.
That's right. Yeah, I need to go home now. I feel like I'm getting sick. the New England weather can be a little dicey at times. I think we had some snow on Friday. You know, we had a couple inches on Friday, April Fool's. It was not cool, but definitely miss home. I've been up here for about 15 years, and I get to go home like once or twice a year to do some playing, to visit my family.
Okay. So you have no family here in the States?
I have my own family that I started. I have a couple relatives in Canada area and a couple in New York.
Okay.
But for the most part, yeah, my direct family is back home in Barbados.
Hmm. Okay. All right. So how did you start playing saxophone?
Well, you know, I was always around music all through, you know, elementary, middle, high school. My parents were not professional musicians, but they dibbled and dabbled. You know, my dad had a guitar laying around the house, so did my grandfather. My mom would sing, you know, in the church choir. And so I was always around music, and I was able to, you know, develop that gift by playing in church as well, and then eventually in middle school. You know, my parents allowed me to take piano lessons. You know, they bought me a keyboard, a recorder. So that's how I really got started, and I actually didn't start playing the sax until I was about 12. Before that, I played piano, and I also played some brass instruments in middle school, the euphonium, French horn, and then I always tell people this story. You know, it was more like a revelation. One day, it just hit me, like, you know, saxophone players are getting all the attention over there, you know. They got all the flair and the instruments flashy, and you know. So I'll be honest and say that that's one of the reasons that, you know, I was inspired to make the switch to the saxophone. There's a number of other reasons too, but definitely it was a better fit for me because I'm more of the outgoing kind of person, wanting to express myself and not be limited to, you know, sitting down, you know, playing you know, a big instrument that you can't really move around with, and you know. Entertain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, do you still play the piano, or can you?
Yes, I do. I actually play piano every day. I'm a Boston Public Schools teacher, so it's a part of my curriculum where I have to accompany students for chorus. And for the past 10 years or so, I've been playing piano and organ at different Baptist churches in the Boston area as well. So I would consider myself pretty fluent at piano and a little bit of organ. You know, I can handle my own, definitely.
Okay, cool. And, you know, the thing that I found interesting about your bio was that you were given a scholarship, a full scholarship to Berkeley by the Barbados government. Now, how did that come about?
Well, you know, Barbados is a small island and very supportive of young musicians in particular. They do a lot of different things to cater to young musicians, workshops, and music programs. There's actually a couple of Berkeley graduates from Barbados that after they graduated, they came back to Barbados and started their own schools or did private lessons. And that really inspired me. One person in particular, Arturo Tappan, who is my mentor. You know, he finished Berkeley in the mid-80s, and he was pretty much the only person that I really had access to in terms of seeing someone play jazz on a horn. You know, I've been hearing it on television, on the radio, buying tapes or CDs. So Arturo really inspired me, and he, you know, kind of pushed me to apply and got me prepared for the audition process and all that. And there's a couple of other great musicians from Barbados that attended Berkeley, and so that was very instrumental in inspiring me to want to, you know, leave my family and pack up and come to the cold to further my education in music.
Now, that leads to my next question is, what was that transition like for you, leaving Barbados and attending, you know, a school in the States? I'm assuming that was your first time in the States, attending the Berkeley School.
No, I've paid a couple visits. You know, I've been to Disney World and all that stuff, but never in the United States for an extended period of time. And it was, you know, it was tough. You know, 17-year-old kid coming up here from, you know, 85, 90 degrees to, you know, I started in the spring, so I came from 90 degrees to 15 degrees. And I remember my dad, you know, he's having problems with his nose, you know, nosebleeds and stuff because we came right after a blizzard, so there was about 5 or 6 feet of snow on the ground. We didn't know what was going on. But, you know, it was a learning experience. And, you know, unfortunately, I'm blessed to have been able to make that transition successfully and to be able to even build a career here in the United States and be accepted, you know, because when you come from a small island and you come up here, it could be a little traumatizing. And, you know, if you really don't have that willpower and that confidence, you know, and believe in yourself, it can be tough, and everyone doesn't always make that transition, but, you know, I was fortunate to, you know, be able to make that transition audition and surround myself with great musicians at school, you know, and we learned from each other. We inspired each other. I met people from all over the world, you know, not just United States, but other Caribbean islands, you know, a lot of Asian and European students at Berkeley. And it's just a melting pot of talent from all over the world. We just learn from each other. And you know, when you leave Berkeley, if you really take advantage of that environment, you know, you can have a successful career, you know, as a performer, as a business person, a producer, a writer, in many different facets of the music industry, if you take advantage of that environment, you know, and I was fortunate to do that.
Now, you said you were 17 when you went to Berkeley?
Yes, 17 going 18.
Do you know how old the youngest student is that they accept?
I know that they have a city music program where they start to mentor kids from high school. I think they start to feed them from middle school, actually. And the five-week summer program would be available to younger students who are in middle school or high school. And then from there, they can start to apply for scholarships through the summer program and then receive, you know, full tuition scholarships for when they want to study full-time, you know, after they graduate high school. So I think they start around 14 or 15.
Okay. All right. Yesterday we had Walter Beasley on. He is a professor at the Berklee College. Was he one of your teachers?
I didn't get a chance to study with Walt, but we're really good friends. He's also a mentor to me, and, you know, I would see him around campus. He was always very supportive of my playing. You know, I was more under the radar at Berkeley. You know, you ask the people that went to school with me, you know, hey, you remember Elon Trautman from Barbados? They're like, no, you know, I kind of just mind my own business and practice. And it wasn't until, like, my senior year that I really started coming to my own and be a little bit more open and trying to get out and play. But, you know, I just soaked it in. But Walt has definitely been very instrumental in helping me to make that transition and to even want to pursue contemporary jazz, you know, because at Berkeley you have many options. You know, there's the boppers and the swingers, you know, there's the rockers, you know, the country music, the funk. So you have a lot of different options. And, you know, Walt is legendary, you know, not just in these parts, but, you know, on a global level, and definitely was his shadow for a little bit. You know, I always will check him out and follow his career, and he's definitely been an inspiration to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you mentioned something that found kind of, I guess you just said that basically you your fourth year, you started to kind of come out and be more open and everything. So you considered yourself a shy kid when you was coming up?
Oh, most definitely, yes. You know, it took me a while to make that transition. You know, the way I was raised is, you know, to be seen and not heard, you know, not to really push yourself in front of people, but rather to, you know, sit back and wait for those talents to make opportunities for you. You know, but as I got older, you know, I kind of noticed that guys were being more proactive, and those were the guys that were really being noticed and getting called for shows and whatnot. And, you know, I had to make a decision whether or not I wanted to be more aggressive and really try to start a career in Boston and develop my brand as an artist. So, yeah, it took me a while to be a little bit more outspoken and just a little bit more persistent in trying to, you know, leave my mark at Berkeley and even in Boston.
Okay.
It's intimidating, you know. Incredible musicians that, you know, went to performing arts high schools. And I remember the first time I went to Wally's Jazz Club, which is down the street from Berkeley. All the legends have performed there. You know, the first time I went, I didn't even take my horn out. You know, I just left it on the table. And it wasn't that I wasn't ready for it technically, but it was more, it was just, I was just in awe of the level of musicianship from guys that are, you know, 17, 18 years old. They sound like they're 25, you know. They've been playing Coltrane, Charlie Parker since they were 12 years old. So, you know, it took me a while to really, you know, get that confidence.
Yeah. Well, I guess it takes a while and everything. But my next question was going to be, before we got into the music, was that, you know, lots of guys, after they leave Berkeley, or, you know, they tend to travel to another state to try to look for opportunities. What made you stay in Boston?
There's a number of different things. You know, just being away from my family And I always knew that I was going to be more of a family person and not traveling as much. I mean, I'm only now really starting to travel more than I've ever traveled before because, you know, that's really the only way you can sell records. But I got married at a young age and started a family and really found a home in Boston. It's very easy to stay here because there's a huge, what we call a GB, general business market, where you can make, you know, decent money playing weddings and corporate events. So that's one of the reasons why a lot of musicians end up staying here, you know, and then also education, you know, there's a lot of colleges in the area. So it's, you know, it's easy to settle here. A lot of guys end up doing that and just playing weddings and, you know, they go on the road every once in a while. But, you know, this is home for me, and my family's been really supportive of late because I've been traveling more than I've ever traveled before. And then also, you know, being in education, it kind of limits me, you know, a la Walter Beasley, you know, where you're not going to be able to travel as much as you want, you know, because you have a commitment to be an educator. So I do most of my traveling in the summer. But, you know, the few times that I've been out on the West Coast, you know, it's really made me think about if I had to do it all over again, you know, where I would be musically if I had made that move, you know, right when I finished Berklee.
We're going to get into the CD Love and Sax, but I have a question for you from the chat room. Tina would like to know, who would you like to jam with?
Wow. Well, you know, one of my inspirations is Kirk Whalum, and, you know, we've actually recorded together, but a lot of people don't know this. We weren't actually in the studio together, and I've never really had an opportunity to play with Kirk in person. I think that would just be an awesome experience for me, you know, a person that I've grown up listening to and almost tried to model my playing after. That would be, you know, a great opportunity for me. And you know, there's a bunch of legendary, you know, artists that have passed on, you know, like Michael Jackson, that I would have loved to be able to just meet. You know, I've never met Prince, but there's a lot of guys out there that you'd like to just, you know, do some FaceTime with them and try to pick their brain a little bit and understand what caused them to be, you know, so great at what they do.
Mm-hmm, exactly. All right. Love and Sax, your new CD. I love the cover of this. I absolutely love that. With the roses coming out of the saxophone, you're sitting there looking at it, and then the silhouette of the lady in the back. It's a great cover. Was this your idea?
You know, it was a team effort. You know, I have a great team of people together that have been really supportive in helping me to get to this point. And, you know, I'm very picky, almost a little too picky at times. So, you know, I was very particular in which photo I wanted to use, and that was definitely my first pick. And also needed to have some, you know, hints of red in there and also a female. We had a couple different options. We actually had to tone it down a bit because the first couple versions that were sent to me were, you know, a little grown up. And I didn't really feel comfortable. So I wanted it to be more subtle, you know, whereas a play on words and, you know, Love and Sax, you know, has multiple meanings and it can be interpreted different ways. So I want it to be subtle where it leaves a lot for the imagination so everyone can interpret it differently. But, you know, it's pretty clear as to, you know, the vibe of the album and the whole concept of the music on that album.
Okay. All right. I'm going to play the Midnight Serenade song, but unfortunately, my screen just froze on me. Doggone it. Okay, let me try to fix that. But tell us
I can sing it for you. Let me sing it for you in the meantime.
Sure. Go right ahead.
Hold on. Let me call Tony. I might break your other screen.
Oh my gosh, it just froze on me. Okay, go ahead, Mike.
Now, how did you guys hook up? How did you hook up with Tony Turri?
I met Tony. I was doing some sub work for Arturo, who is Roberta Flack's saxophonist. He's also from Barbados, as I mentioned earlier. And a couple of years ago, Arturo wasn't able to do some shows with Roberta, and he was gracious enough to refer me, and I was able to do, you know, a short summer tour with her. I did some dates, and at that time, Tony was also in the band as a background vocalist, and he was featured on a couple of the Donny Hathaway duets with Roberta, and we've been friends ever since. You know, we kind of lost contact when I started, you know, doing my own thing, and then Tony eventually started going solo and doing some plays and stuff like that. But, you know, when I wrote this song, there's only a couple people that I really had in mind that I envisioned singing this song, and Tony was, you know, definitely in the top three of that list, and it just happened to work out perfectly with him.
Yeah, he was perfect. I mean, that was, because, like, you know, Tony, you know, was out back in the early 90s and things like that. And then when I seen you and Tony, I'm like, Tony Terry, I'm like, where's this brother been? But when I heard that song, man, I'm like, look, that was fire, man. That was hot.
Thank you,
that
man.
That was really hot. Definitely, man. Now, who wrote that song? Was it you that wrote that, or was it him that wrote that?
I wrote that myself and another writer from in Rhode Island by the name of Neil Latondre. We wrote that song together.
Okay. Unfortunately, I'm still unable to get the switchboard to work so I can play some music here. So I'm still working on that, but
right.
We will continue on until I can get that going.
Tonight will be
amazing,
special evening just for two, and at the stroke of midnight, we're going to play a song for you.
How's that? That was wonderful. Thank you. Oh, my gosh. That was wonderful. Now, you mentioned that you are a teacher.
Yes.
And you actually, from what I read, you teach at two schools.
Yes, I'm at two very small schools in the Roslindale area, which is a small city just outside of Boston. So I see about 300 students in total every week. From kindergarten to fifth grade, and that includes special needs kids as well. So I see every student in the building doing, you know, group lessons for chorus and general music, and then we also have an instrumental program where we do beginner band instruments as well. So I've been doing that ever since I left Berkeley. You know, I taught high school for a couple of years and middle school for a couple of years, but elementary, I've been doing that for at least the last 7 years.
I think you were going to ask the same question. Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to ask you, how do you, at those kids at that young age, how do you convince them that playing an instrument and playing jazz through an instrument is cool? It's actually cool.
Well, you know, I don't even teach jazz. I pretty much just give them an introduction to music and being able to express yourself, whether it be with your voice, with, you know, rhythm, with an instrument. But, you know, it's such a young age, and one of the reasons why I've continued to do it is because every year, you know, I see kids that remind me of myself where, you know, my dad put a recorder in my hands when I was 5 years old, and, you know, it's not an expensive instrument, it's not fancy, but if I hadn't gotten that instrument, I probably would have never even thought about playing saxophone. So I place a lot of emphasis on the recorder. You know, all of my coworkers, my principals will tell you, you know, I make it a point to get a recorder in the hands of every student in the school, you know, from the time they're, you know, 6 or 7 years old up until when they move on to middle school, because it's a great tool for learning theory and just being able to express yourself. You know, a lot of kids, they hear music on the radio, but they don't necessarily understand pitch or being able to sing on pitch. And once they're able to discover that, you know, maybe one out of every five kids might say, hey, you know what, man, I could be, you know, the next Alicia Keys or the next, you know, Clay Aiken or whoever, you know, because they develop that confidence in being able to sing out in front of people and to sing on pitch and to be musical. And that's what keeps me doing it because, you know, we have a bunch of parents that come out every year for, you know, holiday concerts, Black History Month concerts. And, you know, there's nothing more rewarding for, you know, me as a parent too, to see your child, you know, on that stage, you know, making music and for it to sound like music, not for it to sound like noise, you know. So it's very,
right.
It's very rewarding.
Right. Okay. All right. The switchboard is up now, and I can play Midnight Serenade with Tony Terry. Love this song. And there's a video on YouTube that you can also see of this song, of Tony and Elon performing it together side by side, and that is on YouTube. This is Midnight Serenade from Love and Sax. And it does not want to play. Okay. Well, I apologize. I'll have to continue to work on this. My apologies, but the music will not play.
Technology.
So I will continue
technology,
to work
technology.
On that. Yes, yes,
technology.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Oh,
okay.
I keep saying
you. Hey, yo, how do you use technology? I need you right in front of me. You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Don't say. Okay, now, Elon, then you have played for and you know a lot of celebrity athletes. Now, how did you hook up with a lot of these guys too? In order, cause I know you did Ray Allen's wedding, I think.
Yes. Well, you know, Boston is a huge sports town, and that's another reason why I stayed here, because I was able to, you know, form some great relationships with athletes and folk in the front offices of different organizations like the Red Sox and the Celtics. So, you know, Ray and I are actually related. I'm married into his family. So we're, you know, distant relatives, but, you know, he calls me his brother. And I was able to do a lot of events for him, for his charity, Ray of Hope Foundation. Ray's wife, Shannon, is also a musician. She was a singer in a group called Shade. They were on Motown Records back in the early 90s. So I was able to, you know, kind of help her to get back in the studio and inspire her to get her music out, because she's a great writer. And also, they have a record label. They just put out a group called The Goonies, and they're doing really good stuff here in New England as well. So Ray's like family, you know. Bronson Arroyo, I met him just at a general gig, you know, playing at Fenway Park for a picnic, and he came up on stage. It's 2004, right before they won the World Series. And, you know, Bronson's a rocker. He's into Pearl Jam and stuff like that. And I don't remember what song we did. It might have been like a Oasis song or Aerosmith. But anyway, we just clicked, and, you know, we hooked up and played golf together a couple times. And I always tell people, you know, some of the key relationships that you make in business or in, you know, your professional life are go down on the golf course. And, you know, I'm glad that, you know, I'm able to get out there every couple of weeks in the summer and play and meet people and network. So, you know, me and Bronson have been friends ever since then. And he's also been like a brother to me. He's been real instrumental in helping me to get my music out there from a financial standpoint. So, you know, it's hard not to be a sports fan being in Boston anyway, you know, because we're always winning.
There you go.
All right. I'm still working on the switchboard, so as soon as we can get this going, I will definitely get some music playing. Let's see here. I'm emailing BTR now for some help here. Okay. Let's go with I'm sorry, I'm trying to listen to you talk and get the switchboard up and running. And
no
I'm
problem.
Not sure if you mentioned that you played with the national anthem for these
yes.
teams, the Boston Celtics. Okay.
Yeah, I've done the Celtics a couple of times. I've done the Red Sox about three or four times. And then I've done a couple other, you know, major league, Cincinnati Reds, Los Angeles Dodgers. I'm going out to Cincinnati in a couple of weeks to do God Bless America during their seventh inning. And I also did a couple, you know, Boston College games. One was a football game, one was a hockey game. So, you know, in total, I'd say I've done about, you know, 10 different teams, you know, some of them on the college level, but most of them on the pro level. Stadiums, you know, that when sold out, you know, 40,000 people. And, you know, I like that rush. It's a great opportunity to, you know, get exposure. You know, obviously people live to watch a baseball game or basketball game, so chances are by the end of the game, they're really not going to remember you performing. But, you know, it's just great exposure. You know, a couple people would go on the website or go on YouTube and you know, friend me on Facebook or whatever. But it's something that, you know, I love to do. It's fun.
Now, you also have a gospel album out called Let's Have a Good Time. You actually have, and you also have a Christmas CD. Tell us about this gospel album.
Yeah, that was in 2005, a couple of years after I graduated from Berkeley. And, you know, at that time I was really active in Baptist church in the Boston, Cambridge area. And I was, you know, learning the whole African-American gospel music culture. And also worked with a couple of gospel choirs at Boston College. And at that point in time, you know, I was really making a connection with the spirituals from what I was learning about, you know, where gospel music and the blues came from here in America, but also finding some similarities with, you know, the songs that I grew up listening to and hearing my grandparents sing back in Barbados. You know, I found a lot of similarities with that music and the message behind that music and also the history behind that music. So, you know, I took a liking to spirituals and hymns, and at that time I was also, I believe Hurricane Katrina just happened, and I was checking out the music of New Orleans, and I started to really appreciate that music, music from that area as well. And I decided to do a gospel jazz album, and again, Kirk Whalum is very instrumental in being a person that I kind of model myself after in terms of the path that they've taken in their career. Kirk, you know, has been able to be a successful artist in jazz and in gospel, or gospel jazz rather, and he actually just won the Grammy Award for a song off of his gospel album. So, you know, he's been nominated multiple times for jazz, but he actually just won a Grammy for gospel. And I was able to get Kirk to guest on that CD. We played a duet on a song called Everything's Gonna Be All Right. And, you know, a lot of people don't know about that album, you know, main reason being, you know, I was new to the whole recording industry, and I really didn't take advantage of the opportunity of having somebody like Kirk on there. And I really didn't know the industry well enough to market that CD and get it out to the masses. So, you know, it's been a learning experience. But that CD is available on my website, is available on iTunes, and that features Kirk Whalum on the song.
Okay. All right, I just received an email.
Something special planned for us this evening. A dinner by the fireplace, then we'll be sipping on some champagne. Please accept this small request. Can you wear my favorite dress? I really hope you say yes. Girl, you deserve the very best. I'm gonna play a song for you. I love the way you twirl your hair as the music fills the air. You're looking so impressionable. This will be unforgettable. I'll play for you, you'll dance for me. Until the morning light we'll see. Oh. We'll cherish every moment, babe. Tomorrow let's do it all again.
Tonight will be amazing.
Amazing. Let's leave it just for two. And that is stronger midnight.
That was Midnight Serenade. Thank you, Mike, for that.
You're all welcome. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm sitting here playing with the technology, too, and it just came straight on for me. So.
All right. Well, cool. Better late than never. Better late than never. That is such a nice song, Alan. I love that.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, I was ready to sing another verse for you if I had to.
You know, sometimes this thing works and sometimes it doesn't. For the most part, it's okay. But, you know, for some reason now today, it just I was going to say I received an email from Blog Talk Radio saying that their servers, they were having issues with their servers and it is affecting some of the features. And one of the features is the switchboard, which is where I upload the music to play. So hopefully we can get into another song. I'm going to try another song, Mike, so I'll try it on my end, and then if it doesn't work, maybe you can try it on your end. The next song I want to play is the one with Cindy Bradley called Oasis. Tell us how you came to work with Cindy.
I met Cindy at the Hoops Jazz Festival in Springfield, Mass. Last summer, yeah, Cindy was performing with Zoe, a group from the Philly area, and we've been friends ever since. You know, I enjoyed her playing, her sound, and, you know, I approached her. I said, you know, I've got a new album, having a couple of guest artists. I'm having, you know, a guest vocalist, you know, a guest keyboardist, and I want to have a guest horn player. On my last album this time around, I did a nice duo with a trombonist, Derek White, who plays with Neil, and Derek did a great job on that song. But, I just approached Cindy. I said, listen, I got a song that I think it'll sound great with soprano sax and a flugelhorn, and send it over to her, and she just hooked it up, send it right back. You know, these days, you know, you can do everything, you know, with technology, and, you know, you save a lot of money with traveling and studio time and all that stuff. So Cindy did a great job on it, and, you know, Cindy is, she's a rising star. You know, she's definitely making her mark in smooth jazz as a young artist, and I'm glad that I was able to collaborate with her. You know, she continues to rise to the top.
Yes, indeed. She has a new CD coming out as well. So I was very excited to see her on your CD. Mike, I'm going to let you attempt to play the song. It is Oasis with Cindy Bradley. See if you can play that.
Thank you.
Joe from Germany says, man, they really sing on their instruments. This is how music should be. That was nice. That was really nice.
That's very nice. I love that.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate that, man.
Yeah, that was nice. So, Mike, we're going to keep going. The next song is Heaven in Your Eyes with Brian Simpson. So tell us how you met Brian.
I was working with Kim Giles from Beyond One Entertainment, and you know, I said to her, give me a list of musicians that, you know, I gave her a list of about 5 or 6 musicians that I really wanted to work with and that she had some access to. And, you know, we put it out there to a bunch of different people. Actually sent a song to Mark Antoine as well, the song Canción de Amor. And he loved it so much that he actually turned down the invite because he loved it the way it was, which is kind of ironic. So it features, you know, Jeremiah, who I went to Berkeley with. But, you know, Brian, I've seen Brian perform, you know, numerous times with Dave Cause here in Boston. And he's a great musician. And that song in particular, I had written over 6 years ago. I never released it. You know, I had so many different versions of that song. And I just kept tweaking it and tweaking it until I got to the point where I felt like it was ready. And, you know, Brian was the perfect fit for it. I had to do a little persuading because, you know, Brian doesn't generally, you know, do... My album is, you know, real laid back, real chill. Brian is more of a funky, bluesy kind of player. And he, you know, he did a great job on it. He really enjoyed it. You know, it's funny because when I asked Cindy, you know, what's your favorite song on the album? She's like, you know, Oasis, of course. And I asked Brian, you know, what's your favorite song on the album? He said, oh, Heaven, you know, hands down. So apparently they enjoyed, you know, the experience of being able to collaborate with me. And Heaven's actually going to be hitting radio in about 2 weeks. So it's all already being played on a couple of stations, but we are officially going to be pushing that single in about 2 weeks from now. And looking forward to seeing how that's received at radio.
All right. Well, we are talking to saxophonist Elon Trotman. His new CD is called Love and Sax. This is Heaven in Your Eyes with Brian Simpson. Go ahead, Mike. All right, Heaven in Your Eyes with Brian Simpson. That is from saxophonist Elon Trotman's Love and Sax CD. Let us know where we can find your music.
Definitely. The album is available on iTunes, on Amazon. It's also available at my website, elontrotman.com. If you go on my website, you can actually get a physical copy, and that will be shipped to you. And we're working on getting it in retail stores sometime midsummer with my label, Spectre Jazz. So we should have a street date shortly, and I'll keeping people posted on, you know, on Facebook. Make sure you friend me on Facebook. And definitely, you know, there's so many great musicians on the project, it's hard to start naming names. But definitely on Heaven, you know, I was able to work with some great musicians who were based out on the West Coast. My good friend Tony Moore, he was very instrumental in helping me put that song together after we got Brian on board. I want to give a shout-out to Davey Nathan, great keyboardist that went to Berkeley with me, Alex L., the great Alex L. on bass. Of course, Tony Moore on drums, Daryl Crooks on guitar, who was referred to me by Brian Simpson, and the great Luis Conte on percussion, as well as Jeff McCullough, who did a great job mixing and engineering. So just want to say thanks to, you know, some wonderful musicians that really made this project a success so far.
Very cool.
All right. And where are you?
Question, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just going to ask him about, you know, you mentioned Tony Moore and the guys from West Coast. Now, you just went to the West Coast for the, well, the Oasis failed Lemonade weekend.
Yes.
How was that weekend, and how did you go about getting on that?
My radio promoter, Jason Goroff, he was able to hook me up with Bruce Nazarian, the digital guy who was already playing my music. And they mentioned the jam session to me after they found out that the Oasis fell through. And we had an opportunity to jam with some great musicians. I actually got to do another great jam session in L.A. a couple nights before that at Mirabella's for Pat Prescott's birthday party. I got to hang out with Marcus Miller and Paul Brown, Paul Jackson Jr., a huge group, Albie Shore, Evelyn Champagne King. So every time I go out west, I'm always in awe of just how professional guys are, and just, you know, they're really on top of their game, and I'm definitely going to be back out there very soon in a couple months doing a short West Coast tour in dates in San Diego and the Los Angeles area as well.
Okay.
All right. Well, we have 6 minutes remaining. Chris in the chat room wanted me to tell you hello. So she's saying hello to you. And again, we love the CD, what we've heard so far, especially Midnight Serenade. Love that. Definitely love that. Pick up, definitely pick up this CD.
Vocal, if I'm not mistaken.
Is what?
So I think we have a phone call. Let's see. Area code 702? You on the air?
Yes. You have someone on the line from area code 702.
Okay. Go ahead. It's not showing up for me, so I didn't see it.
Okay. Well,
go ahead, caller.
This is Bruce Nazarian, and I just wanted to call in and say that Elon tore the place up on our jam session at the Anthology, and we've been very happy to be playing his music. Look forward to doing a lot of things with him in the future. Elon, if you're listening, you're bad.
Hey, Bruce, I appreciate that, man. Thanks for the opportunity, and thank you for pulling that together. I was able to make some great relationships with Jared and Brad and Vincent and all those guys, Art. So thanks for doing that, man. It really meant a lot.
It was a very great pleasure.
Bruce,
I've got the highlights of the jam session on video, and you guys tore the place up for 7 minutes. I'll tell you, it was awesome. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Well, and Bill, while you're on too, Bruce, I want to personally thank you too for allowing Tony to be on that as well.
Tony Exum was definitely a highlight of that. You know, I got to tell you, the thing that struck me about Pick Up the Pieces was, you know, when it came time for somebody to step out for a solo, Elon just grabbed it, ran with it for a bit, and then handed the plate over to Tony. Tony stepped up front, ran with it for a bit, and all the other saxophone players in the back, there were 7 saxophone players on stage at one time. Everybody else in the back line all of a sudden pulled together a horn section and was backing up whoever was on front plate. And then Blake Aaron took off on a guitar solo, and the roof flew off of Anthology, man.
Wow.
Yeah, you're right. It was great, man. It was great.
Wow. Well, you guys
well,
did a great job, Bruce, in pulling that whole event together at the last minute. You guys did a great job, so kudos to you all for that.
Definitely.
Thank you very much. I had a good team, and I had some great artists there, and most importantly, I had some very great friends that came down and said, come on, let's do this. You know, Blake and Paul Brown and Peter White, you know, on the 6 o'clock show, and everybody just, you know, ran with it.
Definitely.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for calling in.
My pleasure. Talk to you guys
all right,
soon.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right, Mr. Trotman, thank you for joining us. We've enjoyed having you on, and we finally got the music going. So hopefully, you know, you will go out and pick up this CD. Again, it's called Love and Sax, and you can find it on his website, Elan, E-L-A-N, Trotman, TROTMAN.com. All right, Mr. Launch, you have a great day.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me. Thanks very much.
You're welcome. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay, I cannot see. My switchboard is not working. Mike, how many minutes do we have left? Can you see that?
I got you. I got you covered, sir. I got you. You know I got you covered now. We got 2 minutes remaining. 2 minutes remaining.
Okay, 2 minutes remaining. All right, and let me apologize to Bruce because his phone call did not come up on my screen. Everything is just messed up here, so I'm glad you caught that and saw that, so thank you. All right, so let me thank those in the chat room, Mr. Anita Ross, Black Coffee, Colleen, Cress, all of the guests, Joe from Germany, Tina Snipes, thank you all for joining us. Who else am I missing here? Troy, thank you for joining us today. Tomorrow we are talking to keyboardist Lorenzo Johnson about his new CD, Things Are Looking Up. That'll be 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern.
Yes, he's
all right,
a good
Mike.
Artist, very good artist. And he's actually let us see his keyboard player, too, so he's a great guy. Nice guy.
Okay. All right. Well, let's close the show with the last song from Elon's CD called, well, actually, we played them all, didn't we? No, Love and Sax.
No, we didn't. Love and Sax.
Love and Sax. Yeah,
okay,
let's do that. You've been listening to Talking Smooth Jazz with your host, the Jazz Queen.
And Mike Reynolds.
And we look forward to talking smooth jazz with you next time. Until then, keep it smooth. Get it, Mike.